now, from a sold-out Mansion House Dublin, this is an off-the-ball Six Nations Roadshow special with thanks to Heineken Rugby Club, featuring Martin Nugget Williams and Serge the Grim Reaper Betson. But first, would you please welcome on stage 2001 IRB International Player of the Year, Keith Wood, 2006, 2007 and 2009 Six Nations Player of the Tournament, Brian O'Driscoll, and a Thigh Hurling Clubman of the Year, 1985, Jer Gilroy.
Gonna go.
I'd like to point out that I was seven in 1985, so screw you, JP. We'll stand for a minute and welcome everybody. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
Really good.
Yeah, well, the Mansion House looks absolutely spectacular tonight, so thank you all for putting on your glad rags and coming out. Are you nervous? Are you thinking we're going to kill the Welsh tomorrow? See, it's a bit in between, isn't it? No one really knows what to think here.
Are you glad you're listening to Jer Gilroy instead of Joe Malloy talking about two teams that have already lost their first two games of the Six Nations?
Yeah,
yes, you are.
There's a shitty game on TV, which we'll keep you up to date with, you know?
Yeah, actually, Serge doesn't even care about that. He turned up here tonight, you know?
There is a little bit of tension, though. We started out last week thinking, the Welsh have about 12 players injured, and now our injury list is actually a little bit worse than theirs. So from bullish confidence, suddenly it's like, uh-oh.
Woody said there, just off stage, that as it gets closer to the game, the more nervous you get, and that points differential gets lesser and less and smaller and smaller, and so any victory at all, I think you'd bite your hand off tomorrow for it.
Good of you to steal his analysis as well.
Yeah, thanks very much. I'm not talking to you anymore.
There's plenty more where that came from. Trust me, you don't want to be stealing his analysis.
Yeah, it's funny when you're at the start of the week, if you're not on the radio, it's great because you don't make an idiot of yourself, because I was really excited Monday thinking we were going to be in a really good position.
We're going to kill them, like.
Yeah, well, not kill them, but I thought we were going to win and say, 10, 12, 15 points, that'd be great. It'll be tough, but we'll still do it and get it at the end. And as the week goes on, you say, I'm glad I wasn't on air, you know, so you haven't made a Muppet of yourself again. So,
you can do it tonight, though, don't worry.
I've already started. I'm admitting that I was a Muppet earlier on in the week, so that's okay.
Yeah, fair play. So obviously one of the other things that's happened this week is that Joe Schmidt has had a bit of a bite back at something Warren Gatland said about 3 years ago. We'll dig into that a little bit later on. But obviously, Warren Gatland is somebody that we had on the show, and, you know, we extended him a good, full Irish welcome. We definitely... definitely did not put that picture up when Warren Gatland was with us in the Stella at our last off-the-ball Heineken Rugby Club Roadshow before Christmas. So, JP, what do you do? And I said, don't use the photograph.
The ironic thing is that, kind of, if you're going to come out and be critical, then you've got to back it up with other things. So I went and had a look and went, okay, I've been with Wales for 10 years, and I'm thinking, okay, so in that 10 years, so Sean didn't play in the game in Chicago, where Ireland beat the All Blacks. And in that 10-year period, I know he's had a few injuries, he's only ever played on one Irish team that beat Wales. So, to me, you've got to have a little bit of a better record than that. The beef is real! So, you know, I'm just saying, I don't think that's kind of like me just going back and going, you know, if you're going to be critical, then you've got to make sure you've got something to back it up with, don't you?
Does it add a little bit of spice for the game, or are they two very separate entities?
For the Six Nations?
For the Six Nations, yeah, for the Ireland game.
Probably.
How good a job did we do at not breaking our holes laughing?
Would you think he actually put any thought into that beforehand? He didn't have anybody researching exactly what Sean O'Brien has done in his career. I think he's taking that a little bit too sensitive.
It stung him really badly, really badly. And
he was in such good form for the rest of the night anyway as well, so it was, which he wasn't, but anyway.
I know, we're going to be nice to him for about five more minutes. And actually, we're going to get our first guest out now, who is a number seven, who does genuinely love Warren Gatland. Give it up for Martin Williams. Have a seat, lads. Welcome.
Welcome.
Come on.
Where do you want me?
You can come up here.
I'm outnumbered, yeah.
Warren's a nice chap. Doesn't bear grudges.
I think three of us, you have been off his Christmas card list at one point, so myself included. But I think he seems really relaxed since he's come back from New Zealand. And I think getting the draw for the Lions was a huge weight off his shoulders. And he just seems as if, look, I've got 2 years left for Wales and I just want to enjoy my time.
Yeah. Why did that matter so much? Why did that make him relaxed? Because it's clear that there was some kind of cosmic weight lifted off his shoulders by going home and proving to the All Blacks and the coaching staff of the All Blacks and the New Zealand people that he's not just some fluke.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he knew, you know, he's been under pressure, and he's been under pressure in Wales as well. When you look at what he's done over the last 10 years, when he came into Wales, we were complete and utter mess. But in fairness, he's turned us round and they've had a fair amount of success. But I think that Lions tour, I think he feels now his legacy is sort of made and it's done. Whatever happens from here on in is, you know, he's taken two Lions teams away and ultimately he's been undefeated. So I just think he seems far, far more relaxed back home. You know, he's even speaking to the media, which he's never done before.
Do you think he had a sense that he wasn't respected in New Zealand?
Absolutely.
In advance?
I think even in Wales, even anywhere, I think he feels he doesn't get the credit he deserves. And, you know, I've been a little bit critical of him as well since I've retired, that we'd seemed stuck in Wales in the style we were trying to play. But when you look at his CV and what he's done since he's taken over, he's done a phenomenal job for us, you know, with a small pool of players. And I think ultimately, you know how difficult it is for a Lions team to go away. And to eke out that draw, you know, is an incredible achievement.
We didn't want to make it too much easy for him. And that time we were chatting to him earlier on, but it was amazing from the very first day on that Lions tour. The New Zealand press just stuck the knife in. It was quite amazing and yeah. Became incredibly personal, shown by, you know, the clown nose thing, which is kind of rubbish. Anyway.
Yeah, totally.
But,
yeah.
But it kept going on and on and on, and I couldn't get over for the very start of that Lions tour. They had zero preparation for the first couple of games, and he almost put himself on the back foot. So I felt he kind of made it a bit awkward for himself at the start as well.
And I think, you know, the press twisted it in the very first press conference that he was going to target his own son as the weak link. So, you know, I think I was a little bit below the belt. But he's, you know, they dug themselves out of the hole. I think most of us would have picked New Zealand to win that series quite comfortably. You know, and that's particularly after losing that first test. But we all know he's not lucky, Gats, but it just, you know, everything seems to fall his way, doesn't it?
So
you know,
what is it about him? What is it?
I don't know. I wish he can't be lucky for 10 years, can you? And two Lions tours. But when you look at all the things that sort of happen and fall into place, so the first New Zealand player ever to get sent off at home, you know, Bowden Barras mitten all those goal kicks, and it just seemed under Gats's watch. You know, we've beaten, you know, we couldn't win in England for 20 years, and we've won three times under Gats up there. But if you watch and analyse those three games we won, we should have been 20, 30 points down each time. But you just might, I think that's the biggest trait of a Gatland side. They're gutsy and they're stubborn and they're resilient. They just hang on in there till the end.
Well, we saw it last week, didn't we? You know,
yeah.
They had no right in still being in that game, and they tried to play from their own 22. Maybe they lacked some smarts in realising they needed to do what Ireland did against France and maybe kick to regain. But to be within a converted score after all the punishment they'd taken in that game, it was kind of typified.
And that's why you're all nervous tomorrow. That's why you're all a little bit nervous tomorrow, because it's the sort of game when you're underdogs, the players will believe coming here tomorrow. You know, I think in the past maybe we've come over to Dublin, you know, we'd be a little bit, you know, under the radar, not backing ourselves, but the player, Gatti, will make sure they back themselves tomorrow.
Did you enjoy playing under him?
I did initially. I loved my first couple of years.
Didn't we all?
Until you get dropped and then, yeah. No, I think when he came in for us, like I say, we'd got knocked out of the 2007 World Cup by Fiji and we were a complete mess. And, you know, Gats came in and it was a breath of fresh air in 2008 that started that tournament. And, you know, the training methods were short and sharp and intense, 45 minutes maximum, which was unheard of. And we all know if you're getting selected by a coach and you're winning with a coach, you love him, you know.
They're
great. And then I think 2008, 2009, our group was starting to age. And in fairness, you know, he brought a young group in, the likes of Warburton, Faletau, Lydiat, these guys, and they just took her on to another level. I think, you know, we all know he doesn't like if you speak back to Gats. You know, he's not the most doesn't take criticism well, but I did enjoy it. I thought he, you know, I think played some of the best rugby.
He seems a bit like a bit of a magpie in that he can watch somebody do something well and go, that's a really good idea, and just incorporate it pretty quickly. And if he uncovers something by accident, like two tens, it's like, oh, look, I actually can just do this and switch from being a particular style quite quickly. And yet it's interesting to hear you say we were critical of him when he didn't change his style over a period of time.
Yeah, he's got a template to play, and if you watch Wasps play and you watch Wales play over the last 15 years, it is a template, and there's a certain way. But I think he learned a lot from the Lions, that the game has evolved, it has changed. You know, with Sexton and Farrell, I think he's come back in, Rob Howley, etc., have just realised, look, we have got to try and expand our game. And we've seen, you saw them try to do that in the autumn, and you see them kick on again this Six Nations. So they are definitely trying to evolve that Warren Ball type of game.
Yeah, he was pissed off with the whole Warren Ball thing.
He hates
as well.
That. He
very pissed off.
It's very entertaining.
But it's a good point, because no one can actually describe what Warren Ball ultimately is. It's a thing that we all think we know, but when you're actually put on the spot to ask about it, it's very hard to actually decipher specifically what it is.
Well, it's where statistics fully get in the way of a good story. You know, it's like we don't want to actually need all that information just to be able to put that label on him.
You mentioned Rob Howley there. There's been a bit of a love-in this week. Everybody, oh, Rob Howley's a great coach. We totally respect everything Rob Howley's ever done, Sean. It's just, I mean, sometimes you just have to do these things to quieten stuff down in advance.
There's so much smoke and mirrors about, you know, being involved in the media the week of a game. You know, the messaging that goes out, it can be contrived at times, and there's tip sheets that goes with teams that this is, you know, these are the particular messages. But then more experienced players are allowed, you know, go off on their own avenue and do their own thing. But you can be sure that it was pretty tight this week, that, you know, it's about promoting them in the best possible manner and making sure that Rob Howley gets all the praise that he deserves, and just try and dispel any of those Sean O'Brien comments that were made kind of later in the summer.
There was lots of people rubbing the left-hand side of their ear all week when they were like, no, we don't do any analysis of the opposition, rub of left ear. It's like one of the old school tells of somebody not quite telling the full truth. Just watch the body language from Carlton House now, because they're all those press conferences when they're like, yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know that between England and Wales, they're the two prickly coaches, and Ireland actually, because Joe's got a bit prickly this week. So they're the three of them. So in those matches that are going to happen between them, you know there's going to be a salvo, one or two that'll go in, just to see whether there's any reaction to it. And it's only done for reaction. I don't even know if they believe it half the time. Let's just throw that out there and see who's biting today.
Did the Rhys Patchell thing have an impact on his ability to play when Eddie Jones said, oh, here's a young guy, you know, it's going to be his first game at this kind of level. We're going to see what he's made of.
But Rhys Patchell's ginger, and he's been picked on since, you know, he's a schoolboy, so it shouldn't have affected him if it did. But it obviously did get under his skin. And look, some people might have said he was a little bit out of order, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's big boy sport, it's the top end, and if you can say one little thing to get in the back of a ten's mind, then it definitely worked.
But it might not be cause and effect. He might just have had a bad game because he isn't experienced enough at this level. And
yeah, like, I think that's...
So Eddie Jones claims this, look what I did, but actually...
Yeah, Rhys, he's a huge talent, Rhys Patchell, and the question mark is always, can he run a game of 10, you know? And he was found brilliant against Scotland on the front foot, you know, and we grew up, you know, well, I couldn't play 10, but you could have played 10 on the front foot that easily. But then when England in Twickenham was a total different kettle of fish, and he got found out a little bit, particularly in that first half.
Do you think when Eddie Jones or even Warren throws out a bomb like that and tries to take the pressure off his squad, do you think when he messages and picks out a player from the opposition side, that there's also a message to a couple of his own team? Like, he mentioned Jonathan Joseph, he mentioned Chris Rabshoy. Is that ultimately trying to just, you know, drive their game and make sure that they get the best out of them too?
If he had mentioned, if I'm Rob Shaw and I'm listening to that, I'm thinking to myself, right, I've got to get at Rhys Patchell as well. So as well as getting under Rhys Patchell's skin, he's getting into the minds of his own players as well. Look, you know, I'm watching you, and you've got to make... I've put my neck on the line for you. You go and back it up, definitely.
But that's nothing new, and that was done all the time, all years and years back in 2003 World Cup to Carlos Spencer. They said, I think was it Eddie Jones as well? Was he was coaching, yeah. He said, God, what a pity that Carlos isn't able to play the game that he'd really like to play. And so suddenly he tries to throw the ball around everywhere and New Zealand lose. And it was... he wouldn't have been able to do that with someone like Mertens, because Mertens would A, wouldn't have paid any heed, and B, just would have ignored it anyway. But yeah, that's been there for a long time.
Yeah, it seems to have been working for him, though.
Just one thing I want to ask Nugget. I was talking to Tom Shanklin last week, and he mentioned that Rhys Patchell, who's not in the 23 tomorrow, he mentioned that he'd love to see him in a, potentially in a 12 role. Do you think that's the next phase of the evolution with this Welsh side, where you get a real ball player? Not to say that, you know, Ali Parks or Scott Williams aren't proficient passers, but I think someone like Rhys Patchell in that second distributing role off a 10, like bigger, would really allow his outside backs to, you know, to play with width and, you know, knowing they'd be running onto every single pass.
Absolutely. I think that's where Rob Howley sees him, as a 12 or 15 rather than a 10. I think they were sort of, because the Scarlets were playing so well, you know, in Europe, they were forced into putting Patchell at 10, when if you look back over the last couple of years, they've always resisted that. But I think he is, going forward, he could generally be a, you know, a Welsh 12 for the next decade.
But just in 3 weeks, he's a cracking game, he's a bad game, and now he's not in the squad. That's very hard for a young guy, his confidence, you know. So where Eddie Jones has had a bit of a cut at him. But so is his own coach, strong, in the fact that he's not in there now anymore.
Yeah, he's a strong person. He'll be back. He's a quality player, a strong personality as well.
The point about it, the message from the press conferences, actually for your own players, when during the week Gatland was talking about our halfback pairing, which obviously the whole world knows is as good as any halfback pairing in the world at the moment, we've really got a target there, and that was the headline. Oh, Wales going to target this? Like, no shit. But actually, it's pretty for his back row, isn't it? That, like, they've got to be the ones who are in the face of our 9 and 10 and dictating this game.
Yeah, well, Sean Edwards will come up with a plan, you know, this week, and they've been successful, I think, over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. Murray and Sexton haven't been that influential when Wales have played Ireland, and, you know, Sean Edwards is a canny coach, and they love
keep getting injured.
They do,
seriously.
But I think it's a different back row for us. You know, Shingler and Navidi have been superb in the Welsh jersey so far, but this for me, even though going to Twickenham is a step up, I think against Murray and Sexton, this is another level for those, for Navidi and Shingler. Can they put pressure on Murray and Sexton? Because Warburton and Tipperick have done it over the last few years, but can these boys?
It's a kind of a, it is laying down the gauntlet to them, as opposed to saying we're going to target the 9 and 10, really. Like, it's a step up in that they weren't able to impose themselves on the game at Twickenham, and that's what they need to do.
Yeah, I think they were on the back foot in Twickenham, in fairness, in the first 20 minutes. You know, Kieran and George Ford had a pretty easy ride. And when you got Farrell as an outlet as well, it's such a, you know, great position for England to be in. But I just think, it's a big test. They've resisted putting Faletau in, who's probably been our best player for the last 5 years in Wales. So, they think a lot of Shingler and Navidi. You think Navidi's keeping Tipperick out. Ross Moriarty's, you know, he won't be left wanting on tomorrow. He'll just put everything on the line. So it's a fascinating duel. And I look at your back row as well. It's, you know, Stander, Omani and Levy. You know, well, Sean O'Brien there. I just think at the moment we've got the edge in that particular battle.
Already. Right.
Yeah.
Because these are supposed to be, you know, the second tier of... That's what happened at the start of the tournament. Everybody's like, oh, Wales have got loads of injuries. You know, we don't see the names that we expect. And that back row looks almost impossible to recognise from what we would have expected it to be 6 months ago if you had your first pick, and all of a sudden it's like you guys think they're already at a level that's better than Peter Mahoney, Lions
better.
Captain.
I just said that
on a higher level.
On a par.
Get the tape back there.
Before the Scottish game, did you see the Navidi selection coming? Was that a shock to the masses?
I would always pick Tipperick. I think Tipperick, even when Warburton is fit, Tipperick's our best seven, and I put Sam at six. If everybody was fit, they would be my two flankers. I thought Navidi would have played eight because Ross Moriarty hadn't played much rugby. But I think Navidi was outstanding. I've watched him for the Cardiff Blues for the last 5-6 years, and he's been superb. But more as a blindside flanker than a seven. But he's... Fair play to him. He's given the jersey in the autumn, and he's a rock. His father's an ex-Iranian Olympic wrestler, so he's got good genetics. So he's incredibly fit. You watch him tomorrow, he will be everywhere. He's got a huge engine. So in fairness to him, you know, he might lack the ball skills of maybe a Tipperick, but as an out-and-out destructive seven, he's been superb.
Just a reminder, of course, we're live on the radio tonight. If anybody wants to get involved in the conversation, you can tweet us, of course, or, of course, you can just text the show on 53106. And remember, by signing up to HeinekenRugbyClub.com, you can experience money can't buy prizes, backstage stadium tours, and exclusive events like this one tonight. So join Heineken Rugby Club today. You sound very confident for a team who are 4-1 underdogs at the start of the week.
Is there any Welsh in this room or no? No. I'm a, hey!
Yeah, get out.
Well, well done.
If you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I thought, whoa, Twickenham and then Dublin, two comfortable losses for us. But I just think the way it's panned out, I think the injuries, I think Henshaw, Henderson, Tadhg Furlong, that's an unbelievable amount of ball carrying taken out of your team. I just think, and with us with bigger Barkley, Halfpenny back, we are fairly confident. Confidence is not the right word because it's such a difficult place to win.
I know, you can tell the truth.
But look, they're 9-2, and let's just say I put a few quid on that for tomorrow, definitely.
Nice.
Yeah.
Where I think that they've really improved their side, particularly with the game that is likely to come at them with Conor Murray's box kicking, with the tactical kicking from Johnny Sexton, is that back three. Is having Liam Williams there, who's a bit more savvy than Josh Adams, a lot more experience. Halfpenny that covers that backfield brilliantly. I think Ford and Kerr had the run of Twickenham with being able to pick the corners. I don't think that that Anscombe at fullback is able to cover the ground or able to read in advance of where the ball's going to come. Anything like Halfpenny, and then when you're working on in unison with your wingers as well, with someone like Williams who's able to just see things a fraction early and get back and support. I think. Bigger in the backfield, who's another brilliant catcher of the ball, whether he's attacking his own kicks or fielding other kicks. I just think they've really looked at that one aspect of the Irish game, and they've tried to seal it up as much as they possibly can. I'm somewhat in agreement with Martin. I would have thought for all money a couple of weeks ago that Ireland would have been comfortable favourites here, but I think it's absolutely there's nothing between these sides.
So if Wales have that backfield working and they understand exactly what we're going to do, if we're as predictable as that, what do we do to not be predictable?
Well, you have to be very good in the air. You have to make sure your kicks are right on the money. So Conor Murray is one of the most proficient box kickers around, and he has to have a really good day tomorrow where he gives his wingers an opportunity to compete in the air. Whether they're catching them cleanly or just batting the ball back, you get those 50-50s. They're the small margins, because everyone knows that there's nothing between teams in Six Nations. It's the breaking ball a lot of the time, and it might be one score here or there. You saw the breaking ball that Anthony Watson got in the first couple of minutes in the England-Wales game, came back to Farrell, kicked through, try. That's out of nothing. They haven't created that. That is one contest in the air, and look at what it produced, a five-pointer. So it just shows that those moments might seem insignificant in advance of the game, but when you get out there and you get the ascendancy in them, they build momentum towards creating score opportunities for you.
Yeah, my fear is, and I do have a few fears on it, but it's I do think 9 and 10 will be targeted heavily, and they have closed down Sexton and Murray over the last couple of years. And it's how that then links with Farrell and Aki outside it, because how does that actually link in properly? And so that's one area where I just have a little bit of a worry, because with all the pressure that's going to go on there, there's heightened pressure on the two guys outside who are well able, but haven't played a huge amount together. So that puts them under a little bit of pressure. And Porter, which, to try and explain to people, and I know rugby's changed an awful lot and the hit is gone, and that's which is great, actually, but to try and explain to rugby supporters the move from loose head to tight head, having not played a huge number of tight head games, to playing against an ugly wench or Welsh front row, it just makes it so tough. And
it's his fifth ever game in senior rugby as a tight head. Ever.
Well, I remember giving...
not as fifth international.
Yeah. I remember giving an example about Claw, and Claw had played for 10 years or 12 years at some stage, and he went from tight head to loose head. But he kept his feet in the same position that he had at tight head, which meant the ball couldn't go into the scrum. But he said that's the way he always scrummaged. So you have a guy that's trying to do it the other way, where all the weight and all the pressure of the scrum actually goes through the back of the tight head. And that's a really, really tough thing. I thought he was incredible last week. I mean, for a guy that hasn't played it, But he went in, he didn't have to think about it, there was no issue with it. All he's done all week is know that this is going to be the thing that he has to do. But he's good, but he'll be targeted as well.
We had this discussion back in Wales when the Scotland team came down, they were missing four or five of the first choice front rowers. But you know as well, there might not be a scrum for 30 minutes in a game, or 20, 30 minutes. And if there is a scrum, it might be in an insignificant place. I think for Wales tomorrow, they want a scrum really early in a really important area.
Someone just comes out and knocks it on and goes, let's be having it.
We could score, but we're just going to throw it on and just have a scrum anyway and just really target Porter, because it's, you know, the three Welsh players, they played for the Scarlets together, used to playing with each other. So it should be, I think it's an area they will target tomorrow, definitely.
Do you remember years ago we played against Argentina in, might have been the old Lands End Road. Yeah, it was the old Lands End Road. And they won the toss and they decided to kick. And whoever it was, Cantapone, we went up and nudged it like half a foot.
So
like, we'll have a scrum ref. And they were just, because it just shows what a massive impact it can have from confidence and from a momentum shifter. And they obviously were one of the best scrummaging teams in the world at that stage.
It was amazing, actually, when you looked at those old scrums, and it had just started to change when I started, but they used to bind on each other, the two props. And the hooker had nobody binding on them, he just sat in front. So the actual scrum was about 2 feet narrower, and all the weight would go through the hooker. So the second you went to lift your foot to strike, you had eight guys just pushing your head down into the ground. It was terrifying, actually. Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that.
Great, yeah.
I hate it, that I have nightmares of that bloody thing.
I think Irish Six Nations fans have this recurring nightmare of Tom Court playing at Twickenham for... He came on in the 37th minute, and the game was... You know, touch and go, pretty even, and then I think we conceded 30 second half points to England, and it was all through the scrum. And from that point forward, there's been this obsession with getting somebody to lock down the scrum. So what can Rory Best do in the scrum to help him?
Make it unbelievably tight between himself and Porter, like literally the tightest bind possible. Get a very early strike, which... Actually, if you've noticed this year, even though the ball isn't going in very straight, the hookers are striking. They're getting back to that skill again.
Well, they have to.
The game.
It's part of the rules now that you have to strike the ball.
Yeah, you have to. But
so there's no more of what the Argentinians used to do, was just drive over the ball. So now that what lots of sides, and this isn't my area of expertise, I'll leave it to you after this, but lots of sides now are waiting for the hooker to lift their leg before they give a concerted collective drive.
Yeah.
Because there's an instability there, and that's where they're getting their edge.
The reality of it was that you didn't strike it for years, so actually the guys had lost the flexibility to strike. It wasn't that they even lost the skill, they just didn't need to do it, so they didn't do it. Because what happens is, just as you go to lift your leg, it isn't pressure coming forward, it's pressure going straight down, and it's a small panic because you don't want to fall flat in your face with your leg out in front of you. Like, none of us are that flexible. And so that quick little strike, so if he does that, you're then making certain that your flanker and your second row are absolutely locked on the tight head. So if Ireland struggle tomorrow at scrum time, it's because the team unit hasn't done a good job, not because a young 22-year-old prop hasn't.
Right, that's a classic front row comment, right? Because as a flanker, I'm just going to get this off my chest a minute, right? As a flanker on the side,
it was always your fault.
Whenever a scrum went forward, all the front row in the analysis on the Monday were all tapping each other on the back. This is great. Look how good we are going forward. As soon as they went back, flanker's fault. He's not binding every time. Classic. It is. So yeah, if they're going forward tomorrow, it'll all be the front row. If they're going backwards, it's S on the side.
100% correct.
We're nearly done with our match preview here. Like, the confidence that you have in terms of what the Welsh game plan is going to be, it's different with Bigger, isn't it? Like, so it was the full Scarlets back line, and now it's not. But yet, you still feel more confident having Bigger there because he's such a step up.
I'd pick Bigger all day long. I think he's one of those characters. You know, he's a leader. He just, you know, a little bit like Sexton. I think he's such a focal point for that team, and when he plays, he's run the ship so well. So very confident he's here. His kicking game is superb. He won't be, you know, he'll run the game exactly how he should be tomorrow. He'll make the right decisions. There is a question mark. He's not a runner like Patchell Anscombe, so he's not as much as a threat as well those guys are with ball in hand. But I just think for coming to Dublin, I think he's the perfect outside half. So I think it, you know, it was a big positive call from Gatland.
If he's not as good a runner and he's not as good a threat, does that just mean he gets rid of the ball quickly to make sure that the backline can continue to function the way Scarlets have been functioning?
Yeah, look, there's a lot being made of the Scarlets backline, and they've been superb in Europe. You know, don't get me wrong, but it's, you know, international, it's another step up, and you know the pressure and the defence is a lot tighter. So, you know, we'd all love, you know, the Wales to play the Scarlets way, but it doesn't always go that way. And we did against Scotland, but Scotland at home is, it was not Scottish anyway, but all due respect, that's a much easier game than Ireland away. So I think you've got to be a little bit more pragmatic tomorrow. I really do.
One thing that would make me a little bit nervous was I watched the first 10 minutes of the Ireland Italy game back again today, and I remember seeing it in the game during some phase play, particularly on turnover, when we were defending kick chase. A lot of the time we were caught with two front rows together or three front rows. In fact, when Furlong broke or tore his hamstring, he was defending with Rory Best and one of the flankers, or maybe Robbie Henshaw on the outside, and he was extended into running faster than he really wanted at that stage. 5 minutes later, the three front rows defended together. Good sides will pull that apart. Good back threes will identify that. We got done by Stuart Hogg 2 years ago in
Why
the Aviva.
Does that happen?
Because good players in the backfield, if there's bad kick options, they'll come running across. And Jason Robinson used to say he used to always look at defenders' hips. And if they were square, he knew there was nothing there. But you know, if they were running across the field, then there was an option to jink back inside. And particularly with front rows, when they're defending as a collective, they're the ones that you want to pick on. So
outside centres always play the front row for mistakes in defence. They get all the scores. It's always their scores. Is that the story? Jeez. Yeah, that does. It did happen. We became quite tight and narrow.
But that's been our Achilles heel. Yeah. Going back to the World Cup in 2015.
But as the game went on, we became more narrow. Yeah. And it is about just trying to get the right players in the right spot. You can have the forwards together.
Why do we get narrow, though? Why does that happen? Is that communication? That's not our style?
I think there's a huge focus, and I think that's where we'll miss Robbie Henshaw massively as well. We got narrow when Robbie went off. And I think you look at the World Cup, I think there's such a huge onus on the 13 to get into the wide channel. Because as a 13, if you realise that you're narrow, you've two options. You can stay narrow and all the trouble is for you to make up on the outside with your winger, or alternatively you can just shuffle across 3 or 4 metres and you create a massive space between you and the next defender. So what does that next defender do? He looks across, sees this huge space and starts shouting at his inside to push out, or he realises there's a panic here. Robbie Henshaw or 13 can always read back in. It's very easy to defend back in. It's just much harder to push when the momentum's on the outside.
So you set the edge.
I think that the 13 is such a huge focal point of how the team gets their width in defence. And that's why I think Robbie Henshaw is such an important player in that team. Gary Ringrose will be able to come in and do a great job. I'm looking forward to seeing what Farrell's like. He's only had a couple of outings and I've been impressed with him. But it's a big step up. You know, there's one thing playing November internationals, very different format playing Six Nations against this Welsh team.
Yeah, that's another thing. An inexperienced centre partnership, another thing for the Welsh to exploit. You're talking us all into a Welsh victory here.
Yeah, but you know, like I say, we were written off before the Scotland game with everybody who's injured. So look, there is quality in there. I think that's probably been our weakest part of our game, though. The Welsh is counter-attacking. You know, Lee Halfpenny at 15, obviously a superb defender, and you know, we'll nullify the kicking game, hopefully. But it's that counter-attacking, you know, and that's where Liam Williams will be so important. Steph Evans will, he's perfect at that. You know, he will pick up lazy defenders and front row guys, front five players, and pick them off. So it is a part of our game that we did well against Scotland,
yeah,
and not so much last week.
All right, good stuff, Martin. It seems like Martin's definitely predicting a Wales win, and he's put his money where his mouth is. Are Ireland going to win? Yeah, we're not changing our confident outlook for anything tonight. As ever, you can get in touch with us by text, or of course you can get us on Twitter as well. We're at Off the Ball, and of course we are here tonight in the Mansion House on the Off the Ball Roadshow in association with HeinekenRugbyClub.com. We're going to take a quick break. Martin's going to tell us some stories from our Heineken Green Chair, and we're going to get Serge Betson out right after these.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.